Alrighty, what's up, everybody? This is A7X fan Ben, and this is Pirate CSG podcast number 58. I'd like to welcome the newest guest, who is Julius Pepperwood, also known as Mr. Awesome. So, how are you, and how did you get started with the Pirate CSG?
Hey Ben, I'm very excited to be on your podcast here today. I've been a long time listener and lurker of the sites. I guess a little bit of my history. I started playing Pirates when I was like really young, maybe like 10, 9 or 10. It was right around when Pirates of Davy Jones' Curse first launched. I had a good buddy of mine. We played Pokemon a lot together, and we lived in a really rural area. About like really like an hour and a half from like the nearest Walmart. So we're in the middle of nowhere, and he'd saved up like $15, and we were very excited for the kind of Pokemon cards he was going to go to Walmart and buy. It was a big deal. And when he came back and I asked him about the cards that he got, he told me instead that he had purchased some ships. And I was like, dude, what are you talking about? And he showed me one of those they call them display boxes with like the special like the Rusty Harpoon or whatever one of those four-masted ships are like in the clear case at the top. Is that what they're called, display boxes? Yeah, so you got one of those display boxes from Pirates of Davy Jones' Curse, and he kind of showed me how the game played, and I was absolutely hooked from that moment on, and I kept collecting for quite some time. And it's been kind of a lifelong hobby ever since.
Nice. Love it. So TJC and then onward and upward from there. Love it. So mostly what we'll be talking about is your custom set, Pirates of the Kraken Sea. So how did that all start? Because I have the original page up from the blog spot, but I know it's undergone multiple revisions. So how did that all start for you?
Yeah, that was a project. And I was probably like 11 or 12 when I started that.
Nice.
And I was active on like miniature trading. And I don't know, going back and reading some of those old posts, they're quite embarrassing. They're quite cringy. And I think you have the blog spot, the original one open with like the neon green background and everything, right? Yeah, that was kind of a train wreck. I remember when I first posted that, and how do you say his username? Is it Wolf? Is that how you say his username?
Yeah, that's how I say it.
Yeah, Wolf went through and he had a lot of really good constructive criticism to input on it, but it was not a very good first draft. And it was probably I think 2 or 3 years ago when I actually kind of got back into the game and I found your website, Ben, that I started looking into pulling up some of my old files and looking into the custom set once more. So what we'll be reviewing today will be have some holdovers from the original set, but it'll be very much a new revision of it.
Yeah, I love it. Awesome. Yeah, I've got it. We just added it to the customs database. So this podcast is kind of like a fun first reveal of the new version of the set. So I've got it up in the database now, and we can start with the first piece or whatever you want to go over, basically.
Yeah, actually, I think just to start off, if we can actually scroll down to the pirate section, we can start with Captain Mission and the Coleoptera.
Nice.
Oh, and I'll give you kind of an origin story really fast.
Yeah, it's good to see Mission back. He's definitely one of the more iconic named crew in the game.
Yeah, he originally showed up, I believe, in Pirates of the Mysterious Islands. Is that right? Yeah. That was kind of the inspiration for the set, for the flavor text of the original Coleoptera set. After stealing the Coleoptera, Captain Mission painted the ship bright gold to taunt Nemo before setting out to waylay ships on the Sea of Krakens. And I thought that was, I mean, that definitely sparked the imagination of 11-year-old Cal. That was, I thought the idea of like the Sea of Krakens, that is the coolest thing, especially when I was starting to get into like the sea monsters, like the Krakens from the Pirates of the Caribbean set. And that kind of morphed into my own custom set, following after many other users building their own customs. And so I wanted to kind of flesh out what this Sea of Krakens was. Because if I, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the only reference we have to it in the rest of the game pieces, right?
As far as I know. I'll do a quick search, but yeah, it's definitely the only one I'm seeing, so yep.
So yes, that definitely served as the inspiration. So Captain Mission and his coleoptera will serve as a kind of a focal point of the set, and then the rest of it kind of branches out from there.
Nice. Yeah, so this one, whenever the ship succeeds at a ram, you may take one treasure or eliminate one crew from that ship. Okay. Nice. It's not bad. Okay.
Yeah, that was an emphasis I wanted to have on this set, is to really incentivize boarding parties and making those more of a better option to take in the game. And then incidentally related to that, also ramming as well, especially for subs.
Yep.
So we can see that as like a recurring theme throughout some of these pieces.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay. Yeah, nice. And then we'll go over the submarine as well. A little bit lower, Coleoptera, 13 points, 3 masts, just like the original, 4 cargo, S+S speed, all 5S cannons linked to mission, submarine keyword, and then if the ship succeeds at a ram, instead of eliminating the mast on the ram ship, you may replace it with a fire mast. Okay, nice. So it's like a ramming, a fire damage ramming effect. Okay. Yeah, that's not bad. Interesting.
Yeah, that was definitely inspired by the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the Disney movie, where the
Yeah.
Nautilus rams Ned Land's ship and it explodes.
Okay. Yep.
So capture some more of that thematically.
Yeah, nice. Interesting. Yeah, I think the point cost seems good. I mean, it's kind of similar to the original Coleoptera, just a little bit worse cannons, but then better ability. So I think the point cost seems about right for like the package that you're getting. So it looks good to me.
Awesome. And that's one thing, Ben, I know you probably have a lot more experience in this than I do. If you see templating issues or maybe some balancing issues, get any recommendations, or if any listeners have any comments, I am all open to continue to edit the set.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's my first time seeing seeing at least most of the new version of the set. So yeah, so this will be fun. New live look. So anyone you want to go to next?
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and read maybe the flavor text for Captain Mission and the
Yeah,
Coleoptera, and that'll
yeah.
be a signpost for us as we move forward.
Yeah, awesome. As his power grows, his sanity worsens. His neglect has left the Coleoptera's cannons in such a state that if a shot hits its mark, the crew are left scratching their heads in bewilderment. And then for Coleoptera, as her cannons worsen, her ramming abilities grow. Every ram leaves carnage and destruction in her wake as she speedily turns for another round. Okay, nice. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, because I think she had 4S cannons. Or 4Ls. Okay, 4Ls in Mysterious Island. So yeah, cannons getting worse over time, but then ramming gets better. So yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and I
I like
think
it.
Captain Nemo referred to Mission as like a crazed man, and his like kind of wonky eyes in the art. I definitely felt like that kind of led to a guy who doesn't have all his marbles in the same
Yeah.
basket.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that too. 'Cause Mission's original artwork is really kind of bizarre actually. And I actually was just looking through, I was looking for a keyword costing spreadsheet tab from the WizKids documents that Wolf sent me back when miniature trading was going under in 2018, and I happened upon a flavor text document that WizKids employees had edited, and it talked about Captain Mission, the Rise of the Fiends version, being like a clown pirate, which we do see in his later artwork. So it's interesting to think about how that character changed over time from kind of this crazed guy, and then WizKids kind of made him kind of like the new, like Jack Hawkins or Jack Sparrow type face character, and wanted more of a clown look for him. So I'm not totally sure where that came from, but it's interesting. So.
Yeah, because I was never sure if like the Captain Mission that shows up later in like Rise of the Fiends and Fire and Steel is the same guy in Mysterious Islands, because it seemed to change the spelling of his name, but it seems to kind
Yeah.
of fit the same mold.
I know. Yeah, it's supposed to be the same character, but like it is weird. I think they were maybe the spelling change was partly trying to break from the flavor that they had established in a way. So it's almost like he rebranded himself in the lore, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, taking the place of Jack Hawkins in a way, as you said.
Yeah. Yeah, he's always been an inspiration for myself as well, mostly for a 100 point Pirate Empire fleet that I made, and also the he was kind of the leader of the powerful pirate faction in my 2017 Command the Oceans campaign game. So he's definitely influenced the community in multiple ways and different like aspects of the game, both custom sets and gameplay and whatnot. So certainly kind of a weird oddity character, but super influential. So
Yeah, so he definitely plays a large role here. I guess we can move on from Captain Mission there if we like. I don't know if I didn't include it in the document as I'm noticing, but I had a little like a lore preface that went with the set as well. I can add that later, but I can read that quickly here to kind of orient us with what the rest of the ongoing story arc is going on.
Yeah, definitely feel read it.
Okay, sweet. So other than Captain Mission, the set really focuses on the curse, because that kind of seemed to be where the rest of Pirate CSG lore was going towards. The cursed, and then the Vikings also make a very significant impact in the set as well. But I'll read this here. It says, due to the combined forces of the American and European navies, increased pressures from the Northmen, and the continued absence of Davy Jones, El Phantasma is forced to prematurely execute his end game, the resurrection. An apocalyptic event where every soul lost at sea is resurrected under the magic of El Phantasma. In order to enact this, he needed to locate and unlock the seven seals that form a barrier between the worlds of the living and the dead. The location of the seventh and final seal was given to El Phantasma by Baron Samedi, leading him to the Kraken Sea. This seal is located within the sarcophagus of Osiris, the object of Abraham McCoy's quest given to him by Ra.
Wow, no, I love that. Sounds
So,
really epic.
yeah, I don't.
Man.
I wish we could give more details on why I came up with that. That's a lot of that came up when I was like 11.
Yeah,
So,
nice. That's cool though.
it'll feature a couple other figures. Abraham McCoy, we'll see him later in the pirate section as well, and alludes to the continued absence of Davy Jones, which we see in the WizKids sets as well. We have like I think after Pirates of the Caribbean we have only one reference to Davy Jones and something like the Wraith in Savage Shores. So I think other members of the community have kind of played along with the lore of Davy Jones. I think Xerix also has his own custom set Return of Davy Jones, which plays this idea as well. So yeah, this is the lore of this set is intended to take place during the absence of the Sea Devil, and El Phantasma is kind of left on his own.
Okay, very nice. That's really fascinating. I like how you tied in like different aspects of like the Egyptian mythology a little bit, and then the seals kind of reminds me of like a cool like adventure hunt. And then I heard Baron Samedi mentioned, which is interesting because I've gotten into some of the voodoo lore as well for some crazy, really crazy customs in my Epic Seas set. So nice.
Yes, you've dived into kind of the lore of the Loa as well in your custom sets. Oh, awesome.
The Loa, that's it gets crazy. It started with Papa Doc from
Yes, Papa
WizKids.
Doc.
Yeah, one of the crazier and like creepier crew ever for sure. So
Him, the unblinking 99. Man, when those showed up, that definitely caught the fascination of 9-year-old Cal. We're like, whoa, what is this? You can steal a crew? It's awesome.
Davy Jones
I
Curse is
know.
definitely a wild set, especially with like copier Davy Jones, even just for gameplay too. It's like whoa.
Yeah, it was definitely fun to play the curse. Maybe not the most
Practical.
pragmatic faction to choose,
Yeah.
but they're definitely cool. And I believe Papa Doc also makes a return in like the unprinted set Return of Savage Shores as well. Right? We have a and like the Altar of the Low. Is that a UT in Savage Shores or Return to Savage Shores?
Savage Shores, yep.
Okay. Yeah. So I definitely wanted to kinda I did some research a while ago on them, I guess, and that's where Baron Samedi comes from.
Yep.
But yeah, I kinda wanted to play a little bit more with those strings that have been hinted in earlier WizKids productions.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
So
Let's see
with that,
here.
maybe we can start with some of the cursed units, some of the more significant ones.
That
They
sounds
definitely
great.
play a large role in this.
We could go over the first one, the kind of the flagship piece of the set, number 001, the Ancient One. So special edition Kraken, 25 points, 8 tentacles, of course, 1 cargo, which is interesting. Base move of S+S, all cannons rank 2, short range, and for abilities, it's got Kraken, Eternal, And once per turn, you may roll a d6 on a 4 through 6, move target ship L towards this Kraken. Okay. This is definitely one I would want to use. It kind of reminds me of the more powerful Krakens that WizKids made, especially with the Eternal, the good cannons. Kind of reminds me of the Kraken, like the flagship Kraken that WizKids did. And that ability would be really, really good. Because I've played with Krakens a few times this year, and the fact that you can surround a ship after moving the ship with an S is actually really useful, because it essentially increases the targeting range of the Kraken, or like the overall striking range, because some of them only move L, but as long as you can get with an S after that L, you can basically move that final distance to surround a ship. So in this case, the base move is already pretty decent for a Kraken, and then 50% of the time, you can move a ship towards the Kraken, which effectively increases the striking range in a way to SSL, arguably. So this definitely looks pretty powerful and quite a useful piece for the Cursed. What was the inspiration for the giving each of these five one cargo each?
Yeah, that's and that ties into one of the new keywords that's offered in the set called Serpent Rider. A couple of the Cursed have this keyword. I think maybe one of the Vikings does as well. But basically, what a Serpent Rider is means this crew can use its abilities on sea monsters and Krakens.
Nice. Yep.
So I love the sea monster and Kraken idea aspect of the game that was added to it. And I always lamented how, despite how cool they were, they were not practical pieces at all.
Yeah.
They couldn't move and shoot. They couldn't repair. They're incredibly fragile, super expensive, usually really slow. And so I made a lot of adjustments in the set to try and make them more useful. You'll notice like the ancient one's only 25 points, and it's very similar to the later Rise of the Fiends Turoks, which is also crack. I guess Octopus, excuse me, and Eternal. I think that's like running around like 26 points. So already it's already more aggressively costed, and that's definitely more intentional to make it more of a competitive game piece.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I like it. I would definitely use that one for sure.
Yeah, and the ancient one, it shows up in the lore and a couple of the pieces. Its flavor text reads that no name has survived history, though ancient cults referred to it as the ancient one, considering this monster primal force in opposition to creation itself. Since the beginning, it has existed only to stop others from doing the same.
Nice. Nice.
So with living in the Kraken Sea or exploring game pieces in the Kraken Sea, we definitely needed to have some big Kraken sea monsters. And the Ancient One is definitely the flagship of those.
Yeah, nice. Nice. I like it. Want to go over like one or two more of those? They look pretty interesting.
Yeah, do you want to stick with the Krakens, or should we move on to maybe Gog Klokthoth and Lechem
I could go for one more Kraken,
Nemhad? Okay.
maybe. Maybe the third
Yeah.
one looks fascinating. Cryptorol. So that one's 23 points for an 8-tentacle Kraken, one cargo, L plus S base move, all cannons 4S, Kraken keyword, and then this Kraken may surround a ship L away. So instead of just S away. So that kind of reminds me of the last one too, where it kind of increases the potential striking range of the Kraken. So that one, man, that would be nasty. Because you're moving LS, not counting any potential bonuses from trade currents or targeting or anything, and then surrounds from L away. So that's, man, that's pretty scary for sure. I like it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to capture with like the Cryptorol and the Ancient One, is that these are primal beasts that spend their whole lives in the ocean. It boggles me that the sea monsters move slower than our wind-powered wooden sailing vessels.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
I definitely made them move much swifter.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, we can go on to Gog Klokthoth if you want to overview the stats for all the
Okay.
listeners.
Yeah, so those are familiar. Gog Klokthoth is a recurring piece that showed up in Pirates of Davy Jones' Curse. There'll be a lot of callbacks in the set because I kind of liked finishing or continuing on some of the lore. A Gog Klokthoth here for 20 points will get you a 5-masted sea monster with a cargo of 1, base move S plus S, and its cannons are 2L, 3S, 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 and 2L. Its ability reads, Sea Monster, at the beginning of each of your turns, choose any ability possessed by any ship or crew in play. This sea monster now has that ability. You may make a different choice each turn.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh,
And
this
then
is, oh man.
the flavor text here says, when his cult of worshippers were slaughtered at the hands of the Inquisitor, another crew from the Pirates of Davy Jones' Curse, this demigod's power was crippled. Desperate to reclaim his place as a sea deity, God Clockthoth has headed to his place of creation in the Kraken Sea.
Wow. That's fascinating. Yeah, I do like the callbacks to the WizKids flavor and lore and whatnot. It's cool. Man, this one is nasty. So this one, it strikes me because it has copying, but then it does not have limit. So you could use this in conjunction with Behemoth or Davy Jones from the original DJC set, to have two copiers in your fleet, which is pretty nasty. So yeah, that's powerful. Nice.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the cursed, as gimmicky and as powerful as some of the pieces are, they do miss some of the more crucial game pieces. So I feel like this is another way, removing the limit keyword allows them to kind of get those initial pieces or abilities that they really need.
Yeah. Nice.
And then that kind of leads us into Lechem Nemrod, another piece that is a callback to Ocean's Edge, where Lechem Nemrod first debuted. It's a 21.5-masted sea monster with a cargo of one. It moves a long plus or an L plus S base move, and its cannons are 3L, 2S, 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 3L, the inverse of God Clockthoth's. And its ability reads, Sea Monster, once per turn, you may use this sea creature's action to place a whirlpool and L away from it. The sea monster does not roll for whirlpools. And her flavor, the source of her rage, still unknown. Lechem Nemrod has pursued her former mate, God Clockthoth, to the Pacific, around the coast of Chile, and now to the Northern Atlantic. Her path is quite distinguishable as she's left a trail of destruction and despair in her wake.
Wow.
So
Nice.
the original lore was that God Clockthoth and Lechem Nemrod were initially mates at one point, and for some reason, Lechem Nemrod is furious at GC. So this is
Yep.
kind of continuing that train of lore.
Yeah, makes sense. Nice. This one strikes me as powerful too. Because the whirlpool placement is limited to L away from the creature, but it's automatic, unlike Calypso, where you have to roll a 4 through 6. So, and on top of that, it's already got a good base of speed and, firepower, so to speak, with its tentacles. So, definitely another really good one that I would want to use. So, this makes me want to finally edit the vassal module. It would take a while, but it still needs to have like sea creatures inputted into it. But this definitely, I control the curse in that game, so this definitely makes me want to do that. So nice. Yeah,
Yeah.
another cool one. I like it.
Yeah. I love the variants that the original Pirates game has, but sometimes it really bothers me when I use a ship's action to try and roll a dice and it repeatedly fails. And so especially with something as gimmicky as like placing whirlpools. So I made it more so if you decide to not move this game piece for its turn, you're guaranteed to get something in return for basically skipping its action.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, I guess one other maybe sea monster we could highlight. This one isn't a five-masted squid, but rather a four-masted sea serpent, if you want to move down to Apophis there.
Okay. Awesome. All right, yeah, Apophis, a rare 4-segment sea serpent, 17 points, four masts, one cargo, L plus L base move. Cannons are 2S, 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 and the 3L for the tail, linked to Sammy the Skull, which is interesting. Ability Sea Monster, and whenever the sea monster eliminates a crew or a mast, choose one. Repair one segment as a free action or submerge as a free action. Okay, interesting. And then the flavor text is worshipped by many cultures under different names. Apophis is old as the earth itself. Locked in eternal combat with the sun god Ra, Apophis fell into a deep slumber after the fall of those deities. That was until Sammy awoke the beast and unleashed this scourge upon mankind once more. Okay. Another ancient dweller. All right, I like it. Yeah, good speed, good cannons, definitely usable. And then the ability that I'd have to use to give much feedback on it, But I could see that happening relatively frequently with this thing staying submerged and then ramming and then choosing to board and maybe eliminating a crew after the board, or after the ram, I should say. So that could help it a little bit. I don't know how much it would happen in game, but I think between the speed and cannons and that ability, the point cost is probably all right. I think it's a good cost to like start it at. I have a feeling that maybe it could go cheaper, but I think it's a good start. I don't know how much the submerging as a free action would come into play, but that could be pretty devastating actually. That might be the best part of the creature, because if you could pop up while you were still safe, submerge, pop up, ram, board, eliminate a crew, and then submerge as a free action, and then they can't shoot back on their turn. So yeah, it sounds pretty nice actually. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of gameplay I had in mind, is a kind of like a defensive measure to kind of keep it alive. Like I said, because the sea creatures are so fragile, if they get hit, they're kind of toast. So I haven't play tested I haven't play tested many of these actually, and so I don't know how this would actually look in real life. And so this is, yeah, like you said, this is kind of a starting point for many of these pieces. So
Nice.
I'm worried that maybe this became a little overpowered, especially with like the Serpent Rider keyword, where some crew with that does give it the captain ability, so it can move and shoot. So I don't know if in that combination it might become a little too oppressive, but I'm excited to see. So, I love that L plus L base move as a kind of a callback to the Mistwalker,
I thought of that
a piece I've
briefly
actually never
too.
been able to get my hands on.
Nice. Yeah, we could check out the Linked crew, Sammy the Skull. So he makes a reappearance, linked to Apophis and all cursed ships, actually. Ability Serpent Rider, so it can use abilities on sea monsters and krakens, along with the Captain and Helmsman keyword. So extremely useful, pragmatic crew for the cursed. And flavor text: as a Chummaker was reduced to splinters during combat with a French armada, Sammy found himself sinking in the depths of the sea. In the darkness, he awakened an ancient deity and called it to his aid. Sammy then rode the serpent into battle, decimating the French fleet. Wow. Yikes. Okay, nice. Yeah, this one would definitely pair well with a lot of these the creatures that have cargo. It definitely would make Apophis like a pretty good force to be reckoned with. The lack of ability to repair would still hold it back, but I could see this being a kind of like a short-term cursed flagship that you use like really aggressively, because at that point she'd be going LLS with some pretty good combat capability with Captain as well. So nice.
Yeah, I just know like in games I've played with, like we have a plethora of canceler crew. I know that can really wreck captain ability specifically. So I tried to put in some more defensive measures for some of the sea creatures.
Yeah,
So.
nice.
Yeah, those are the kind of the big highlights of some of the cursed units there. Elephantasmin, the Wraith, and the Hag of Tortuga are also cursed crew that make another reappearance here as well. We do have two forts here. The Tentacle Temple is one of my favorite ones. Continue with the sea creature theme. It's a four gold, four masted fort. I guess you call them flags. Its cannons are 5L, 4S, 4S, 5L. And it reads that ships docked at this fort may use their action to give a sea creature two actions this turn. Sea creatures docked at this fort may be given repair actions. And its flavor text reads, built by an ancient cult that worshiped the Kraken known only as the Ancient One, these ruins still hold some influence over the horrors of the deep.
Wow. Yeah, I could see this being like a must build for cursed only fleets that use sea creatures. It's definitely like one of the better like utility pieces in the set to use. Like if you were using like a Kraken sea only fleet, this would be high on the list of cursed things to bring along. Yeah, I would try to have, I mean, it's kind of obvious, but I'd try to have like a cheap gold runner just like permanently stationed at the fort and essentially use it as like a Lord Micron type thing for a creature.
Exactly.
Yeah, but then that repair ability is good too, so nice.
Yeah. And to balance it, I tried to really reduce its combat capabilities. Like it's only four flags and its cannons are abysmal. So I tried to balance it out that way.
Nice.
Cool. Any other cursed game pieces you want to go over?
I mean,
You thought
I
were.
did see the new version of Wraith has fog hopping, which certainly perks my attention up. But yeah, that's, oh man, the Curse have launched like most of their fog hoppers in Vassal Campaign 4, and they're going to launch any new ones that come out as well. So they'll probably have their eyes on him next round, I think. So.
That'll be awesome. Because do we have any crew in the original game that allow fog hopping, or is it just abilities stapled
No.
on the actual ships?
Yeah, it was only on ships. So
That's what
I
I
know,
thought. So,
yeah, Pirate Captain Andrew has at least one fog hopping crew, and there might be one other one in the database somewhere, but yeah, no originals. So yeah, it's really powerful because then you can put it on a 10 master to make like a teleporting 10 master. So yeah, it's super, super fascinating.
So yeah, I mean, to read the piece, it's Wraith. The point cost is 7. It also has Serpent Rider and Captain, and then the Fog Hopping ability. If this ship ends its turn in a fog bank, on the next turn, it may use its move action to move out of any other fog bank in play. It's linked to all cursed ships, and the Wraith's flavor text reads, "With his search for the Heart of Stone being unsuccessful so far, Elphantasma has charged Wraith with gaining dominion over the beasts that prowl the waters of the Kraken Sea."
Wow. So he didn't find the Manawa no Kohaju. Nice. Interesting. Okay.
So kind of call back to his previous search of the Heart of Stone to regain his powers he lost after his encounter with Crimson Angel,
Yeah.
all the way back in Crimson Coast. So
Yeah. Nice. Very
we
nice.
will remain to be seen if the Wraith is successful in his hunt for the relic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I might mention the set to Jason Michael too, who did some of the flavor text. I think he'd be proud that the community is still carrying on the torch after all these years. So,
I think I made a post, I guess it's been a couple of years now ago, on your website actually, talking about the lore of the game, because I just find it so compelling. Some of the characters are just so interesting, and the WizKids design team did a really good job at making a very engaging, immersive world in which to play the game. So
Yeah,
yeah, it
agreed.
was a lot of spaces to kind of take different characters. And as we move on, we'll see that, yeah, a lot of them have been explored in various directions.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, we can move on to the Vikings if you want to pick one out.
Yeah, so the Vikings they're by far my favorite faction. One of the worst ones, but my favorite. I love the longship design, but I have so many personal feelings about the longship keyword.
Yeah.
Similar with sea creatures, the longships are typically really fragile. And so I tried to do some things to mitigate against their fragility. And I mean, historically, the long ships are actually very swift and nimble vessels. So I tried to make them a little bit quicker. And then I lowered their point costs a little bit because I thought they were a little overcosted in their debut in the Frozen North. So to dive into the Viking faction, they really focus around their first 10-masted ship called the Ragnarok. And its linked crew, Njord, God of the Sea. So, what if we start there on cell or row 54?
Yep. Awesome. Yeah, this one's going to be wild because I can pretty much guarantee that my Vikings will launch it in CG4. But yeah, limited edition Ragnarok, 36 point 10 master, 6 cargo, base move of S, cannons from bow stern 4L, and then 3 3 S's in a row, and then a couple 4Ls, and then 3 more 3 S's, and then a 4L at the stern, linked to Njord, God of the Sea, and Njord's Raiders, and the abilities are junk, and then it's got the bounty keyword as well, which I've got on the first tab here, so I'll just read that. Bounty is when the ship sinks, the attacking opponent gets 2 gold for every mast the ship had when it was constructed. Okay, interesting. All right, and then I'll go to the next one. Some other abilities it's got. This ship's cannons may fire from any mast. Wow. Once per turn, roll a d6 on a 5 or 6, place an iceberg S away from the ship and immediately roll for it. It cannot be placed touching any other ship. The ship ignores icebergs. And then for the flavor text, hoping to strike a crushing blow against the cursed, a ragtag fleet of longships ambushed the massive delusion. The ensuing battle saw nearly every one of the raiding ships destroyed, but by nightfall the Northmen were victorious. After purging the wickedness from her timbers with all manner of mystical runes, the Viking sent her to Asgard as an offering to the sea god, hoping that the gift would please him. Fortunately, it worked better than they'd ever hoped for. Wow, yeah, that's pretty epic. Nice. Man, this is wild.
Yeah, it's admittedly it's probably a little over the top. The
I mean,
ships
I've made,
cannons and 500 masts, that's unbelievable.
yeah, I mean, I've made
But
crazier customs, so don't mistake my amazement for anything bad.
the high point cost of 36, that's right around some of the most expensive 10 masters. I tried putting it up there, but then also I gave it the bounty keyword, which was designed to kind of lower the point cost of some kind of crazier abilities. So giving an opponent a very large bonus for being able to sink the ship, I
Yeah.
thought would help lower the an otherwise exorbitantly high point cost.
Yeah. Yeah, 20
So.
gold could be game winning potentially if they sink it. So nice.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah. Yeah, the cannons can fire that is really interesting. 'Cause then you could stack them all on the bow and like not need to get in range like normal. So that's pretty wild. I never like thought of an ability like that. So and then five or six iceberg us away. So, do you roll for it for Ragnarok's damage or no? Because it says it ignores icebergs. You just roll to see if it moves, I guess.
Yeah, the movement for the iceberg, yeah.
Okay, cool. Interesting.
So, and then if it winds up moving towards the Ragnarok where it touches it, it has oh my gosh, invulnerability towards iceberg, so won't have to worry about that.
Yeah, nice. And I assume it's that one is supposed to be a mandatory ability rather than optional.
The ship ignores icebergs or the rolling.
They're rolling to place.
Oh yeah, it's a mandatory, so there's no
Okay.
optionality in that at
Yeah.
all.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay, interesting.
I've used 10 masters frequently, especially mainly the Bausch one, where like I pull up next to another capital ship and I realize that only like I don't know five or six of my cannons are even in range most of the time. So I really feel like a lot of the potential of a 10 master, namely the final three masts towards the stern, really don't do a whole lot in a lot of combat scenarios. So unless you're like in larger games where you're like sailing into a mass of ships. So I tried to find an ability that would help make it more powerful in combat, like 10 masters need to be, but that was kind of the inspiration behind that ability there.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And then Ragnarok is linked to Njord, God of the Sea, which has a point cost of 10. Its ability is Loyal Vikings, Hostile Cursed, Limit, Captain, Serpent Rider, Alter Fate. So it's got a whole slew of keywords. I don't know how necessary the loyal and hostile abilities are. I may wind up eliminating them, but nevertheless, it additionally reads, once per turn, roll a d6. On a 1 through 3, give any ship you control an extra action. On a 4 through 6, place a storm at least S from any ship.
Oh.
And then we're just using the same storm rules that actually Xerix came up with. I was listening or watching some of his campaign videos, and I thought storms were an extremely compelling game piece idea. So credit goes to Xerix there, but I really wanted to implement that in the Kraken Sea.
Yep. Nice.
And then I guess the Alter Fate, that's a new keyword.
Yeah.
And with Alter Fate, it says this game piece starts with four fate counters. Once per turn, when the ship or crew on the ship rolls a d6, you may remove a fate counter. If you do, roll a d12 instead of a d6.
Whoa. Huh. Oh, man.
Yeah, so that kind of introduces a new game mechanic. I'm using counters. There's not any really stipulated way on how to represent them. I think just those little miniature dices that the game packs come with are definitely serviceable,
Yeah.
but they're just basically used to track how many times an ability has been used or keep track of how many game actions have taken place. You can just put a little dice on a deck plate or a crew card, and they don't take too many cargo space and not even considered cargo. They're just there to keep track of game abilities.
Yeah, that's
So
wild. Because the
thought it
D12,
was.
because the D12, like, probably, I don't know probability super well, but it seems like it would at least double the chances of getting a high effect, like a six required roll or whatever. Because you'll end up just getting like 9 or 11 right off the bat, potentially. So.
Yeah, one of the UT's Runes of Thor where changes any die roll to a six. That was kind of the inspiration for that, like because the Vikings seem to have the ability to kind of play with dice rolls a little bit. At least the relics dedicated to their gods, and Njord being one of the Asgardians coming down, I feel like it would be kind of fun to tie in some of the runic abilities,
This one is
without
wild.
being too oppressive, limiting how many times it can happen in a game, I thought would help it from being too oppressive.
Interesting. Yeah, this one would definitely be fascinating to play test. Just thinking about it, if you use the counters, you could have what looks like to me a 75% chance of placing a storm, at least S from any ship. Interesting. So the way, so it says on a 4-3-6 plays a storm at least S from any ship. So that specifically the at least part is fascinating to me, because then theoretically you could place it super far from the designated ship and close to other stuff, like instead. So I guess
Yeah,
that could get
basically get some
interesting. So I guess questions are, does it have to be at least S from all ships, or could you say, oh, since I'm farther than S from the target ship, I could place it like right next to or even underneath an existing ship, a
Oh,
different
that's a good
one.
question. Maybe rewording on that might be helpful there. But yeah, I was intended it so you couldn't just put a storm immediately under a ship and then cause problems for that ship.
That'd be bad.
So if there's
Oh,
like a conglomerate of ships there, it'd have to be at least an S away from any game piece there and
yeah.
any ship.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I could see
So
how that interpretation of the wording works too. Yeah, I see. Yeah, okay.
and then the Alter Fate unfortunately wouldn't increase chances on that because the wording on it says it's specifically on a 1 through 3 or a 4 through 6 taking action.
Oh, okay.
So anything higher than that would result in nothing happening. So,
I was thinking like the way plus ones work, if you get like a 6 plus 1, it's not a 7, it's a 6. So I was thinking, I thought the 7 through 12 would be 4 through 6. Okay, interesting.
Gotcha.
That
Yeah, I
actually
totally see
helps
the
a lot with
difference
the point
there.
cost, I think. Otherwise, it could arguably be overpowered, but I think that makes Alter Fate a lot more reasonable. So there it would be more useful for like boarding parties, it seems like. So.
Boarding parties are like double actions or cannon rolls. Like when you really need to roll high on something, like you have to get a six for your double action or something, then you can use Alter Fate. So, and yeah, then Njord's flavor text reads, "Accepting the delusion as an offering, the god of the sea descended from Asgard and has joined the Vikings in their plight against the cursed."
Wow. It's kind of ironic too, because the Vikings and the Cursed are not fans of each other in the Vassal Campaign game 4, potentially, so nice. Some of this flavor could tie in well with the game in the long term, potentially. So nice.
I'm reading through your Vassal Campaign game battle reports. I noticed that like the Vikings are right next to the pirates, and the pirates are doing unbelievably well. And the pirates already having so many advantages, and the Vikings already being so small. I can definitely see Ragnarok and Njord being very serviceable in the Viking campaign against their neighbors.
Exactly. Yeah, the Vikings need everything they can to turn the tide or even just stay alive potentially. So they gladly, every time I come in the customs database and there's like new stuff for the Corsairs of Vikings, I'm like, oh nice, this will increase the parity. So that's good. So nice.
I made a bunch of named crew for the Vikings because they're very, very they don't have very many of them. They're very sparse in the actual WizKids product, so
Yeah, that's
actually
good.
making
Yeah,
them.
I've been meaning to add more to my set at some point too. There's not too many in there so far, but yeah. And yeah, Manhuer from your original Kraken Sea set got into CD4 along with some of the other stuff, so They're
Oh,
definitely,
awesome.
they'll take all the reinforcements they can get.
Yeah,
Love it.
hopefully some of them here will be helpful.
Definitely.
So,
All
yeah,
right.
a couple of the Viking crew that we have one reappearance actually. Derek the Red, he was also featured in. I have a lot of Davy Jones Curse callbacks in this set. I hadn't realized it was all from that set. He was initially a pirate, but for 6 points, he is a captain. And this ship gets +1 to a cannon rolls against any non-Viking ship. So his original ability was actually a world hater against non-pirates. So this is a kind of a readjustment on that. And his favorite text is, after receiving word that Njord walked among his kinsmen, Derek abandoned his personal interests on the Crimson Coast and sought penance at the altar of Forseti. Now he joins those he'd previously forsaken for the preservation of his people.
Yeah, callbacks are intense. It's really cool to like link all that stuff together. Nice. I'd probably bump him to
Yeah.
7 because World Hater is normally 4, but other than that, he looks good, so nice.
Yeah, that's probably good. I did bump into 7. Actually, they make a really good point. I don't know if I've done much work on Derek in a while. So, yeah, so I don't, the Vikings didn't have any World Hater crew, and so that's very much a staple ability for every faction. So I thought Derek would be a fun one to plug in there.
Nice.
Another callback here, I guess we can keep running on that train, is Warlord Thorfinn. He is a point cost of 8. He again is loyal Viking, hostile cursed. He also has the bounty keyword and the eternal keyword. And then he also has the ability that this ship eliminates 2 masts with one hit. So this could be really dangerous putting that ability on a crew. I thought it might be mitigated a little bit with putting that crew in the Viking faction. But I don't know, what do you think of doing the 2 masts with one hit on a crew, Ben?
Usually I've warned against it in the past. I think what helps here is bounty, because you could potentially get like some pretty good gold out of that. So yeah, I don't know. I'd have to play test it. The one thing, what strikes me here is that he's eternal, so his ship is going to come back. So theoretically, an opponent could get that bounty more than once in a game, which could give them quite a bunch of gold. So that's kind of interesting. But yeah, it's also like it's kind of like a double-edged sword putting him on a big ship because the bounty will be bigger, but then eliminating 2 masts with one hit will theoretically be better and better on the bigger ships he's on, like maybe the Ragnarok even. So yeah, it's kind of like an all or nothing crew, kind of like a big swing type crew. Like he might win you the,
Yeah.
he's like reasonably likely to like win you a game or lose you a game kind of thing. So
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you have Njord on the Ragnarok, where there's, I guess, no, excuse me, I misspoke. But if, yeah, you put him on the Ragnarok, they have double bounty. So if you wind up seeing the Ragnarok with Warlord Thorfinn on it, then yeah, you're giving your opponent heaps of gold
Yeah.
there.
Well, I get, they
And
wouldn't stack, but it would still be 20, so still be a
oh, I guess,
lot.
yeah, that's a true point. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd probably want to, I'd try my best to like cancel Eternal when I was sending the ship down to get the bounty and then not have it come back, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of, that was one of my intentions with the eternal ability there, is that yes, it your ship comes back repeatedly, but then again, you giving up your opponent the opportunity to profit from your use of the eternal ability.
Interesting. Yeah, that's pretty fascinating actually.
So in play testing though, if that becomes too oppressive, I guess maybe you'll find out in your vassal campaign if well Warlord Thorfinn makes an appearance. But if the limiting 2 masks with one hit on a crew is just too game broken, then we can definitely adjust that.
Nice.
Yeah, and then Thorfinn is linked to the Valkyrie, a ship that made an appearance in the Frozen North. And his flavor text reads, currently at the height of his personal rampage against the cursed, Warlord Thorfinn and his fearsome Valkyrie pursued the foul vessel Last Hope and put to flame the crew that ended the lives of his wife and children. Such a deed did not go unnoticed, putting the warrior on El Phantasma's hit list.
Nice.
Yeah, the original Valkyrie, that's probably one of my favorite ships of all time. It's this little one-masted longship from Frozen North. And its flavor text reads, Captain Thorfinn lost an eye, a leg, and his family to the curse, and swore never to rest until every last monster has been destroyed.
Yeah.
And so he actually, in the gameplays I'd have with the friend I mentioned earlier, he had the Last Hope. And there were several times that the Valkyrie and the Last Hope would come up against each other. And the Last Hope, the art on the ship is really gruesome. It has like decapitated bodies hanging from the masts. And
Yeah. Yeah.
anyway, so we always we always imagine that, oh, that those were like the bodies of like Thorfinn's family and stuff.
Oh,
So
God. Yeah.
yeah. So that gameplay experience and our imaginations around that kind of grew into the flavor text of Thorfinn and the Valkyrie.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I like how that can inspire a custom. It's cool. Nice. All right.
Yeah, and then there's a whole host of more longships and stuff there. I try to make them more balanced between kind of fragile gunships and then quicker raiders and gold runners. If we wanted to look at a few of those, we can, or we could move on to the next faction.
Yeah, I see Valkyrie got an upgrade, Timber Suede. Timber Suede looks like a better version of the one from the original set, so that's good. I'll gladly take it for their purposes in CG4. So yeah,
Yeah.
any other pirate stuff you want to go over?
To the pirate faction here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we talked about Captain Mission and the Coleoptera already. We can talk about Captain Abraham McCoy, who's kind of an interesting figure that appeared in our prefacing. He's a 6-point crew. He has a bounty, captain, and helmsman. And when this crew is turned face up, place 4 search counters on its assigned ship's deck plate. Once per turn, you may remove a search counter and eliminate a treasure from this ship. If you do, take a unique treasure from outside the game and put it on this ship. All effects occur immediately. So with your I can see in your campaign games you made significant use of some UTs. With your experience, what are your thoughts on being able to tutor for, specifically search up unique treasures?
Yeah, it's definitely game breaking, just to be honest. So, yeah, I mean, it's much more game breaking in a campaign game than in a regular game, to be fair. But yeah, this one, I mean, what helps is that you will have to eliminate an existing treasure. So that does help that you have to already be carrying something. So that's definitely a big, downside that helps. But yeah, I would still be tempted to try to gamify that. So yeah, I don't know. I would definitely consider increasing the point cost. It does have bounty too, so there's like a couple negatives. It's another crew that could be like really swingy, like it could win you or lose you the game. But yeah, I'd probably do at least 8, maybe 10 points. But yeah, what I'm thinking about is like eliminating ones or even negative UTs to bring in like Neptune's Trident and stuff like that. I think it does help that you have to put it on the ship, so then you can't bring in like Altar of the Loa, some of the crazy UTs that stay on islands. So that helps a little bit too. But by all effects occur immediately, does like Neptune's Trident, for example, you normally it's like part of a shoot action or whatever, or you like unleash a wave. But like if you put that on the ship and it didn't, if you weren't in range of enemy ships, would it be lost, or would all effects occur immediately? That's more for like plague and stuff like that, probably.
Yeah, I think with like specifically with Neptune's Trident, since you're not actually giving the ship a shoot action, I guess the Neptune's Trident initiates a shoot action regardless of what you've done with the ship so far. But I guess if there's no ships in range, then it'd be nullified.
Interesting.
So yeah, Neptune's Trident is your target. You've got to make sure it's the ship that Abraham McCoy is on is in range of other ships, or it'd be absolutely useless.
Okay.
But
So you would have to toss it. Okay. Interesting. Okay.
yeah,
Cool.
I know. Would it be better? Would it absolutely would it just ruin the whole idea if we say take a random unique treasure? So I guess there's several new treasures that stay on islands and stuff, which would just be probably eliminated since it's on the ship.
Yeah, I think that would be. You'd also have to not only come up with like a random number generator of how many UTs are in the game, but also assume that players have access to those. I mean, obviously there'd be proxies with customs most likely already, but yeah, I think it'd be awkward to be like, oh, I don't have that UT, or oh, that's trees stays on the island, or stuff like that. So
Blood money or something.
yeah, it'd be kind of weird to have it be random,
Yeah.
I think. But
Cool. Maybe we could do a little more workshopping on that.
yeah.
We'll revisit it later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he is linked to the Wings of Ra, Isis, and Eye of Horus. And his flavor text reads, "Forsaking one god for another, Abraham was in turn blessed with immense wealth and consequently no shortage of covetous enemies. In return, his new divine patron has tasked him with finding the sarcophagus of Osiris, or risk losing everything." And that is a couple of the ships there. Eye of Horus and of course, the other ones mentioned there continue to build upon Abraham's story arc, which is a significant signpost in the Kraken Sea lore.
Yeah. Nice.
Another ship I thought was particularly interesting here, let's see, was the Wyvern on line 65. It's an uncommon four master, so 13 points, three cargo, an S plus L base move. Its cannons are 5L, 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 5L. And when this ship eliminates an enemy mast, place a bounty counter on this ship's deck plate. This ship gets plus one to all her rolls, every bounty counter she has. When this ship is sunk, the attacking ship's controller gets 5 gold on their home island for every bounty counter on this ship. So, I templated this one early on. I may change the name of the counter because that gets kind of a little confusing with the actual bounty ability, especially since it works in a similar way. But regardless of the name of the counter, yeah, the her rolls, including her cannon rolls, get significantly better the better in combat she does.
Yeah, interesting. Was this one inspired by the Wyvern, like prank at Miniature Trading back in the day, or no? It's separate.
I don't know if I'm familiar about the
Okay.
prank. This is the first time hearing about
Yeah, it
it.
must have been a different inspiration. Yeah, it was like Old Man and some other, at least one other, I think it was Master Commander. They did a April Fool's thing where they had a ship that was fake. They basically made it seem like it was the third ship in a bottle, one of the one of one prototypes, and it
Oh,
was
wait,
gonna
that does
come out.
vaguely sound familiar.
Yeah, and they called it the Wyvern, and then they revealed it to be like a prank. So it was pretty amazing.
So remember,
But
Old Man, he had one of the original ships in a bottle, right?
yeah, he had both at one point, yep,
He had
or at least
both,
for a
okay.
while. So
Gotcha. Oh, that's like tingling like a vague memory way back then. That's
yeah.
interesting. Yeah, I had this was totally independent of that. I had no idea.
Yeah, nice. Nice. Yeah, I could see this ship being like decent. I think you just have to get her going. Maybe with like some kind of world hater crew to eliminate that first master too, and that at that point she's kind of off to the races. So yeah.
Or pick some like some smaller quarry, like a little one or two master, something easy that can sink its fangs into, and then
Yep.
get those bounty counters rolling. But
Yep.
then
Yeah.
again, the more powerful she gets, if she gets sunk, then your opponent gets oodles of gold.
Yeah. Nice.
And then the Wyvern is linked to Rosalind Kennedy, and the flavor text is having lived in her father's shadow long enough, Rosalind pirated away the Wyvern from Jack Hawkins. Using the ships and her father's reputation to field a new complement of sailors relatively quickly, the real challenge was gaining their loyalty once they found out who she really was.
Nice.
Yeah, is there any other pirate factions that look particularly interesting you wanted to go over, or should we move on to the next faction?
Yeah, I'll just read Kennedy real quick.
Oh, that's a good idea. We should do that.
Yeah, sure. Rare crew 7 points, linked to the Wyvern ability captain, and whenever a shoot action is initiated against the ship. Roll a d6 for each cannon directed at it. On a 5 through 6, eliminate a mast from the attacking ship. On a 1, remove a cargo from the ship. Mutual damage is dealt simultaneously. Wow. Okay, that's wild. So on a 5 or 6, eliminate a mast from the attacker. The only. Wow. So I just hope that's not too big of a disincentive to like attack the ship in the first place. Like that's a huge, like most of what strikes me about that is it's like immediately retaliatory versus like the defensive abilities in this game normally are just like, oh, you can't shoot at the ship, or oh, you need more shots to take down my mast, things like that. But this is like, you shoot at me, you're gonna get hit. I think I have one or two customs kind of similar, but they're definitely would need heavy playtesting because it's potentially too much, like too powerful of a disincentive to attack the ship. It would definitely help with those bounties if you accumulated a lot of bounties. You could still maybe deter opponents from attacking, but yeah, pretty powerful. So my initial thought is maybe. I mean, it does have the negative too, so remove a cargo. My initial thought is maybe 8 or 9 points might be a good start for playtesting, but
Okay.
another interesting one for sure.
Yeah, I think several other community members have played with the same idea, but realistically, like in naval combat, you wouldn't, it's not turn-based,
Yeah,
right? If you attack a ship, like they have equal opportunity to return fire. So this is kind of a way to simulate that as well. I also definitely had similar concerns. Like I said, a lot of these haven't actually gone through rigorous play testing. So that's why I added on, it's basically shooting back with 4-rank cannons. So a 5 and a 6 are pretty difficult to achieve, relatively. And then the negative on a 1 remove a cargo. And Rosalind Kennedy could be one of those cargoes removed. So you do risk losing this crew itself. So, I tried to put some give or take on that to balance it out. But yeah, I think you're definitely right. It definitely needs to be play tested because it could be impressive. It'd be a really good defensive ability. Too good. But
Nice.
and then her flavor text, and she's clearly linked to the Wyvern as well, as we talked about it, but she says that claiming Jack Hawkins as her father will get you pretty far amongst fellow pirates. That is, until they find out you're a woman. Yet not one to rely on pedigree alone, Captain Kennedy prefers to let her prowess as a naval commander prove she's the daughter of the infamous Hawkins.
Nice.
So, another callback to the fan favorite Jack Hawkins.
Yep. Nice. All right. Yeah, we could move on to the Spanish if you want to pick one of those out.
We could talk about El Pescador. He debuted in Ocean's Edge as well. He had the ability to move Titans and such around, right? And he's related to the El Toro game piece. And in the Kraken Sea, he's worth 6 points. And his ability says once per turn, a sea creature or titan within the L of the ship may be given an extra action. And his flavor text, when word of the terrors that plagued the Kraken Sea reached Comandante de Alva, he knew just who he needed to call upon to ensure the safe passage of his treasure fleets.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, this one is really, really good. I would try to have him on a something that can keep pace with what I'm giving extra actions each turn. I think you could just eliminate the Aura Titan because Titans are part of the sea creature. Sea creatures include like all the different creature types. But yeah, this is really
Oh,
good.
gotcha.
I would definitely want him in pretty much any fleet that uses any kind of creature because that's like really good ability. So nice.
Yeah. Would Kraken fall under that sea creature umbrella as well then?
Yeah, all of
Okay.
them. Yep.
So we can do that with a couple others then. Yeah. With the sea monster and the keyword in the sea creature game piece reference, it gets a little confusing sometimes.
Oh
So.
yeah, I don't think they did that optimally, at least not quite, so
Yeah.
yeah.
Cool. The El Pescador at 6 points, I wasn't sure if that was enough for like the guaranteed extra action for a sea creature within an L.
Yeah,
Because typically you have to roll for those. This is a guaranteed one.
it's tough to say, 'cause like My comparison is like Lord Micron, who is automatic, but then you have to give up the action. This one, you don't have to give up the action, which is big, but you do have to be within L range. So it's kind of like more of a accompaniment or like escort crew versus like a global control center like Micron. So I don't know. I'd have to test it out a little bit. I think since it's limited to sea creatures too, that helps a little bit. Like if it was a ship, any ship, that'd be probably at least 10 points. But yeah, I think it's fair to start at six, yeah. So
Yeah, and then we can look at the Elizote. It's the Kraken that the Spaniards got. So
nice.
that's a 22-point Kraken with the customer 8 masts, 0 cargo, and a base move of an L plus S. His cannons are 4S, 2S, 3S, double 4S, and then repeated again 2S, 3S, 4S. It has a Kraken keyword, and when this Kraken sinks a ship, you may place all of her treasure at your home island, referencing the ship that was just sunk. With
Wow.
the flavored text of wreaking havoc amongst the Spanish advance fleet, this monstrosity was El Pescador's top assignment upon arrival at the Kraken Sea. He once again proved why his talents are so valuable, but others with more malevolent intentions may be taking notice.
Nice. Yeah, this one's excellent. This one, I don't know if it would be like competitive in like 40 or 50 point games, but with that ability, you could really rack up gold quickly. So I think this one's really good, mostly because of that ability and the speed, of course. But yeah, nice.
I know most Spanish game pieces are really focused on acquisition of treasure and like manipulating treasure values, and so I tried to tie that in with their Kraken here as well to help go towards that acquisition of gold game plan.
Yep. Yeah,
So
makes
I would
sense.
probably send this guy. I mean, it's a Kraken, so it's huge. It's a good offensive piece, but I'd probably send it with its advanced speed to go chase down enemy treasure runners. It's kind of what I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Nice.
Yeah, any other Spanish ones you wanted to look at?
Mean, I definitely see some interesting ones right below the Kraken. I'll go through. I see a 10 cargo ship, so I gotta check out that one real quick. So a rare 6-masted junk, La Torre Al Paraiso, 15 points, 6 masts, 10 cargo, S speed, or just S, sorry, I'm like misspeaking. So just 1S. And then cannons are 5S, 5S, 4S, 4S, 5S, 5S, and then ability junk. And once per turn, you may trade one of the ship's treasures with a random treasure from a wild island. The ship must load the traded treasure. And for flavor text, intrigued by reports from conflicts in the South China Seas describing giant treasure ships, the Spanish Admiralty commissioned the construction of their own floating El Dorado and sent her seeking for related riches. Okay. Yeah, this one's like an extreme Spanish galleon, but this time from the east, from the junk world. So I think with 10 cargo, I'd probably have a higher point cost. I'm not sure what would be appropriate. This is one I would definitely do everything in my power to make faster and then make it into a big treasure galleon. So I'd probably start this one at like 18 points at least.
18. Okay.
Just because, yeah, because the cargo really opens up a lot of wild possibilities. I mean, I will say with a grain of salt though, because I'm so used to campaign games, maybe this one still probably wouldn't be as good as like Hoya del Sol in like a 40-point game. So I guess playtesting would be good to see about a point cost change, but yeah.
Yeah, I love the game pieces that are like these that are very large treasure runners.
Yeah,
Because
I do too, yeah.
typically most treasure runners are very small, like usually like 3 masts or less typically, and which makes it easier to like to on the they have less defensive abilities, but
Yeah.
and I really like the idea of very large treasure galleons.
Yeah, same. Yep.
So but I did what I could to try and make it, I mean, as a non-factor offensively as I could with those cannons.
Yeah.
And then its speed as well. I'm trying to make it a lot more vulnerable.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Yeah, we can move on to the French.
Yeah. The French, other than the Vikings, the French are my favorite faction as well. My favorite like recurring faction. I tried to really emphasize boarding parties with the French. So with that, we have a returning crew, Philippe Jordan, and his linked ship to Lafayette. I want to know your thoughts on this ship's ability because it could go either way. Beginning with Philippe Jordan, though, he's a 5-point cost crew with the ability that whenever the ship initiates a boarding party, she gets plus one to her boarding rolls for every crew on the boarded ship. And the ship gets plus one to her ram rolls. Linked to the Lafayette, with flavor text saying, seen as a demotion by some, Jordan's reassignment away from the Neptune was actually relief for both him and his superiors. Celebration quickly followed suit when he caught sight of his new command.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that one's pretty interesting. I think the point cost seems about right. It's kind of a reversal on something that Xerix and I and some others have done for a while, where you get plus one to every crew assigned, but now it's on the enemy ship instead, which is kind of cool. Kind of like an underdog fighter mindset. So, yeah, I like that crew. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then we can turn. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you go ahead. I was gonna move on to the ship, so.
Yeah, I was going to go and do that as well. So if you like, you can go ahead and read the Lafayette.
Awesome. So the linked ship is a four master Lafayette, 18 points, four masts, four cargo, S plus S speed, cannons 2L, 3S, 4S, 5L, and linked to Jordan, of course, and ability of galley. And if this ship wins a boarding party, you may place a crew from this ship on the boarded ship. If you do, you control that ship for as long as that crew remains on board. So pretty dramatic ability. And then flavor text, growing tired of Jordan's claims that his unique skills were being wasted on such a hulking vessel, naval commander saw an opportunity to finally put the objections to rest when a captured corsair vessel made port. Okay. Yeah, this one's pretty interesting. Yeah, I see most of the cost being, or at least a good chunk of it being in that ability. I'm not sure what would really happen there in terms of, man, I guess my initial thought is it's too powerful just to like capture a ship based on the one boarding party die roll. I have a not I wouldn't say it's a similar ability, but it's a similar mechanic on one of the most famous pirates of all time. I can't remember which one, but I still gotta edit it where like you win a boarding party and then capture the ship, because in the age of sail, you know, ships would often surrender before they, you know, they we wouldn't have to make them derelict or anything. So kind of a similar
Precisely, yeah.
mechanic. Yeah. But in this case, that's wild. Because then as soon as you control it, you would do everything in your power to make sure that crew stayed on the ship. So yeah, that might be too powerful, but I don't know. I'd have to play test it and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah, because that's definitely what inspired is that, you know, if you win a boarding party, you're not just gonna like, I don't know, take a load of treasure and then say goodbye and walk back to your ship. Like typically, like you just took control of that ship, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's typically how a lot of naval combat went. So I tried to find a way to kind of replicate that in the game. So in order to take control of the ship, you have to give up a crew from the Lafayette onto the boarded ship. So I was trying to kind of balance it that way, where you can only take control of ships as many crews you have on the Lafayette, and if that crew is eliminated somehow, whether do another boarding party, then you lose control of it again. But yeah, like you said, like more play testing would probably help twist the knobs on that ability. But anyway, it was an idea I was trying to play with.
Yeah, I could see the link crew could be pivotal in some of those boarding roles. So I would definitely include him, probably a helmsman, and then maybe a captain, but I'd probably want to include at least two oarsmen or just kind of random crew like that. One thing that's really, really crazy about this that I just thought of is that you could intentionally include crew in your fleet via the plus five crew. Like Jules de Sissy is the French one that match the nationality of your opponent's fleet. I mean, they might have a mixed fleet, but you could kind of see, you can see at least their ships before you bring in the extra plus 5 points. So if you saw that they have like a Guichuan, you could intentionally include like a cursed crew that's 5 points or less, like even a cursed oarsman or helmsman, and then intentionally try to capture that ship. And then the crew would be able to use their abilities when they go over, which is pretty crazy to think about in ter certainly in terms of like gamification. And you could even, for those 5 points, you could get a canceler of that faction that your opponent is using, which would make it harder for them to recapture the ship or eliminate that crew. So, wow, yeah, this really opens up a ton of interesting gameplay options. So that's cool.
Yeah, like the you can jump through different hoops, like you said, to try and make, I guess, just plan ahead and target ships you want to take over. So that's what I was kind of hoping with this design, is that it kind of opens new avenues of gameplay and fleet design.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's one I'm excited to play test eventually.
Definitely.
And plus it's a four-mast galley, and those are my favorite, one of my favorite ship designs as well.
Yeah, they're
But they
gorgeous.
look, they're so cool.
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
Yeah,
Want
are there
to
any
check?
other French game pieces you're going to look at?
Maybe another time. I'm kind of intrigued to see the Americans as well, so.
Yeah, what intrigues you about the Americans here?
I mean, I'm seeing Charles Southwind, which is cool. Another callback. I'm seeing a bunch of them actually. Some folks that I definitely recognize. I think I'll probably might take a peek at. I see wind counters mentioned, so that's a new mechanic. So I'll check that one out. So Goddess is a common two-masted schooner, American, 10 points, two masts, four cargo. Base move of L plus S, cannons 5L, 5L, ability of schooner, and place two wind counters on the ship's deck plate during setup. When this ship is given a move action, you may remove a wind counter. If you do, you may give the ship an extra move action. Okay. Almost like kind of similar to the screw engine UT, but like a couple guaranteed right from the start. And then flavor text, with the United States being an almost exclusive monotheistic country, the pagan captain of the goddess has had to be discreet about the worship of his deities. His crew seem to be indifferent as they enjoy the favorable winds that propel them to fortune. Okay. Yeah, I could see myself using this as a gold runner for sure. I'd probably go helmsman, maybe explorer, and then yeah, I'd probably use one on the first turn or two to try to get to an island that's like farther away than most of the others near my home island. Did the wind counters take up cargo space or no?
They do not, no.
Okay,
Yeah,
nice.
counters of any kind, they are not considered cargo.
Yeah, okay, nice. Okay, yeah, it's pretty good then.
Yeah, I felt like in the later sets, particularly like Fire and Steel and Rise of the Fiends and such, a lot of ships lacked like defined roles.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's what, something I tried to do with the Kraken Sea, is that to have ships that are clearly gold runners, clearly raiding ships, clearly gunships. So and I felt like the Americans had a lackluster repertoire of gold runners, so I tried to make one that was very, very clearly a gold runner.
Yeah, nice. Cool.
Yeah, and I thought their the USS Silverado, I thought was an interesting one as well. I kind of liked playing with that. It's a rare five master. Point cost is 17 with cargo 3 and base move S plus S. Has really good cannons, a 2L, 3 3Ls, and a 2L. And his ability says equipment does not take up cargo space and has no negative effects on a die roll of 1.
Nice.
And it's flavor text, a brand new vessel fresh from the shipyards, the USS Silverado is designed to take the United States into the future. She's been outfitted with cutting-edge weapons technology and a seasoned crew to ensure her maiden voyage to the Kraken Sea will reap benefits for the Americans.
Nice. Yeah, I like this one. Clearly a gunship. And yeah, I like that ability. It's pretty similar to one I've had on at least one or two customs from the Epic Seas custom set. And yeah, no negatives on a die roll one. That one is especially awesome as well. Yeah, this one I'd load up probably a named crew, maybe a named captain, or like Commodore Peregrine Stern would go well with this one for sure. And then like yeah, at a minimum Captain Helms and Oarsman, and then just load up basically. Probably exploding shot, maybe stink pot or fire, maybe double. So I like it.
Yeah, I tried to limit its cargo space down to three a little bit, so you couldn't just have a an unseemly amount of equipment and a bunch of really good named crew. So,
Nice. Yeah, I like it.
and then I thought that the Seafarer one was one I tried to play with a little bit. It's a rare one master, the point cost of four, cargo zero, and a base move is L plus L. His cannons is a 5L, and its ability reads, whenever the ship initiates a ramming roll, sink her at the end of turn. Each ship within an L gets a fire mast. And its lyric text reads, part of a secret program hidden from the public and most politicians for fear of outcry, the details of Seafarer One are on a need-to-know basis. Manned by a skeleton crew of death row inmates, she was given just one, albeit simple, mission.
Nice.
So,
Nice.
in most games, I think it's a pretty common for most people, but like fire masts are incredibly effective. So that'd be kind of interesting to have a really cheap kind of suicide ship to go and put a lot of fire masts all at one time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Sinker. So, do the fire masks get placed right after the ram roll or when she sinks? Are they going to
Right at the
be?
ram roll, maybe a better templating of the wording can help that.
Okay, interesting.
The ship needs a ram roll. Each ship within an L gets a fire mast. Then say the end of
Wow.
turn sinker. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Man, yeah, that's really good. I know it's just like a suicide bomb, basically, but I would probably bump the point cost up a little bit. Mostly because of the speed makes it's kind of hard to avoid getting rammed by it potentially. So I don't know what cost would work though, because it's like if it doesn't go off, it's kind of just a waste of points. But if it does and you can hit like maybe two enemy ships and no friendly ships, it could be pretty devastating.
Yeah.
I guess
Like
playtesting, I don't think a huge increase would be necessary, especially with no cargo, because then you can't have a helmsman without cargo master. So even five or six might be fine for playtesting, maybe. I don't know. It's pretty interesting.
yeah. And the way I intended it is that if you have friendly ships within that L range, they would also get a fire mast as well.
Definitely. Yeah.
So yeah, so we gotta be careful. If there's just a big a conglomerate of ships locked in combat, you gotta it's risky if your ships will get attacked
Yeah.
by your own
Yeah.
on a friendly fire. So do
Yeah.
you think it'd be
Interesting way to gamify this. Of course, I'm already thinking about all these crazy combos, but like, if you had Calypso in your fleet, you could pop a Whirlpool on the first turn with an L of a wild island that's near the enemy home island. Well, this would require a lot, actually, because then you would need Micron or something to give it a double action, but then you could send this ship through and then ram an opponent ship's docked at their home island, then set them all ablaze. But you'd need a lot. That would already be a bunch of points, and then they could just redock and extinguish all the fires on their turn. So it almost acted like a really expensive version of like becalmed, like keeping them there on the first turn. So, but anyway,
it'd be like a really weird jump through a bunch of hoops way to skip their first turn.
Nice.
Yeah, so I felt like a lot of the ships, especially in the later sets, just kind of had the same like abilities. They just went through the same cycle of abilities and then just
Agreed.
changed the ship size or the speed. And so just they didn't feel very, I don't know, inspired,
I
a lot of them.
agree.
So I tried a lot of really weird abilities. So I have no idea how to really cost them. So
Yeah, that's totally fine though. I mean, there's a lot of that in the database, so it's definitely one of the fun things about making customs. And I'd rather see this than yeah, Fire and Steel, which there's so many mediocre pieces, and yeah, it's just like reverse captain overpriced and like plus one to boards and like
yeah, the plus one
more
to
like
boards killed
L
me. You're like,
speed.
oh, this is so uninspired.
I know. And it doesn't really affect games hardly at all. And then like L speed
Yeah,
on like
everything.
small, yeah, like small ships that are more than 10 points. Yeah, it's yeah.
So,
Nice.
yeah. So, if you have recommendations, if they wind up making into your campaign game on Vassal, or if anyone else plays with them, if you have recommendations on recosting or maybe like retemplating of abilities, I'm definitely open to that.
Yeah, I'll definitely keep it in mind. Yep. Love it.
Yeah,
Okay.
if there's any other American ships you want to look at, we can move on to our final faction there.
Okay. Yeah, English are next. My favorite. So we'll see what I can find over here. I'm seeing some holdovers from some of the other stuff, or sorry, existing WizKids pieces. Specifically, I see Roderick the Pure looks like he's come back. So Roderick, Knight of Malta, English common crew for 4 points. Ability says whenever a friendly ship sinks at a counter to a ship you control, this ship gets plus one to her rolls for every counter she has. Okay, that's really interesting. And then flavor text: after the death of his friends Benoit de Marsillais and Raphael Teresa, combined with the expulsion of the Knights of Malta by the French, Roderick suddenly found himself without place or purpose. However, once word of the cursed threat reached the seasoned warrior, he sailed north to face this new foe, galvanized once more by the thought of the lives he could save. Okay, I like that flavor text as well. Yes, it's cool. I don't know. I don't know. That's an interesting one. So it's basically, the more the game goes on, theoretically, he should become more powerful. But there's also this weird incentive to lose ships and then flip him. I'm thinking about including a few cheap like sloops on purpose, or even like the Seafarer one actually would work. And then you intentionally try to lose ships early in the game on like random little missions that are not likely to work or whatever, and then flip him as a surprise, and then start accumulating these counters, and then use that plus one to maybe can not just cannons, but hopefully like maybe Admiral's action rolls to try to get sixes, or even just basic like same action twice, extra action. So yeah, pretty fascinating. Okay.
Yeah, I wanted a crew that would kind of manipulate and play with the idea of putting counters, because Roger doesn't really care what counters ships have as long as they have them.
Yeah.
So, like for example, like the HMS Atlas below, it has five ability counters. So with Roderick, if you lose a ship, you could realistically put another ability counter on the Atlas.
Oh boy.
So, or and if he's not, he may not even be on the Atlas because he allows him to put it on any ship you control, really.
Yeah.
But she specifically gives ships you control plus one to every counter she has.
Yep. Interesting.
So, yeah, and then I just thought it was really interesting the named crew like Roderick the Pure and then like Benoit de Marsillais and Raphael Teresa. I just thought they were just kind of a cool trio that didn't have a lot of spotlight, I felt like, in the Barbary Coast. So,
Yep. Yeah, they got kind of shafted on abilities. Like they were too expensive or just not notable. So,
yeah, and it
yeah.
looks so cool, like so.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, and then Sir Rupert Hargreaves, he was kind of an interesting one, I thought. For 5 points, he's a rare crew, hostile French musketeer. For every other crew on the ship worth 3 points or more, this ship gains one rank three cannon with S range that may not have its range or cannon roll increased. It can shoot from any mast, even an eliminated mast.
Okay.
And then his flavor text reads, despite his age, Hargreaves is still a capable soldier. Commanding a small squadron of ships, Rupert is hunting any vessel that flies at tricolors.
Nice. Yeah, it's kind of like a musketeer with bonus cannons. Definitely incentivizes like monster setups. I could see him being good on HMS Dreadnought and then maybe even the Endeavor potentially. So yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, you
Yeah, I
think about it,
imagine.
definitely captain will be at least one extra. I would try to get at least like minimum two extra 3S cannons whenever using him, which would only be 11 points at a helmsman 13. So maybe like base minimum cost 13. So yeah, you could go pretty crazy with this on the bigger ships. And then Shui Jean is another perfect one, the Merc 10 Master, because that one could fit like, five or more 3 point crew or more. Interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because like I designed him for like large like 100-point deathmatch games or like large campaign games where you're loading up ships with just to the gills with a really expensive crew.
Yeah.
Just a way to kind of take advantage of that. So,
Nice.
yeah. Any other English ones you wanted to take a look at? I know the English are your favorite faction, so.
Yeah, we could go over HMS Atlas. I'll tie that one up. So, five-masted rare, HMS Atlas is 17 points, five mast, four cargo, SS base move. All five cannons are 3L, and the ability says place five ability counters on the ship's deck plate during setup. Once per turn, you may remove an ability counter to add plus one to any die roll the ship has made this turn. Okay, that's cool. And flavor text, the only ship to face the Ancient One and live to tell the tale, the Atlas still bears scars from that Titanic conflict. I love it. And of course, the English are the only ones to survive that. No. Nah. All
That
right, I'll stop.
was just for you,
So,
man.
all right. So, yeah, this is cool. Man, this is good. Yeah, this is like, I think this cost seems really right to me, especially with the once per turn, and it's plus one to any die roll, like a specific one rather than all for that turn would be too powerful. So I think this is really balanced. I probably want to use it in conjunction with maybe like an Admiral's Action Crew, where you can give any ship in your fleet 2 actions on a six. But just in general, five ability counters gives you a lot of flexibility too. So you're not like, unlike sometimes like SAC, you might only have two or three oarsmen to SAC. This gives you pretty good amount of flexibility, so you're not like, you don't feel stressed too much about picking your spots, you know, infrequently. So that's a pretty nice ship.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the ability counters are designed to work. In theory, if someone like stick sack captains, because you have a guaranteed result for using the ability, but then you also have a limited amount of times you can do it.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the idea as well.
Yep.
And
Nice.
then I felt the English could use a couple more treasure runners, so I gave them a pretty decent one. I thought on line 129, the or unit 129, the HMS Charwell. It's an 8-point two master with three cargo and moves S plus S plus S. His cannons are 4S and 3S with the ability that reads after the ship is given an explore action, she may move as a free action. With a flavor text, once a famed treasure hunter, Captain Windsor's credibility came to question when claims surfaced that he manufactured some of his findings in the Spanish Main. Desperate to repair his shaky reputation, he set sail for the Kraken Sea. When captured pirates mentioned tell that an ancient temple with immense power was located there.
Fascinating. Nice.
So
Yeah, it's
it's
like
kind of like
a
a reverse captain, but with exploring.
reverse explorer. Nice. Nice. Yeah, that's good. I like it.
So
Cool.
imagine kind of pairing it with like an explorer crew, and this thing could be whipping across the map pretty quickly with islands.
Yep. Don't know if you had this in mind as like a blockade runner, probably, because it's uncommon.
Yeah,
Like those little,
exactly. That was kind of
yeah, that's what I
the
figured.
ship model I imagined.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I like it. We could go. Yeah, we could do maybe the Merc crew just because there is one, and then a UT as well, I guess, to finish up. Yeah, so the mercenary, there's an LE mercenary crew, Alexei Bouchard, 2 points, and abilities are expatriate and choose one crew during setup. This crew is linked to that crew. Whenever a counter would be removed from the ship, roll a d6. Out of five or six, create another counter of that kind. Okay, nice. And then flavor text, a brilliant strategist for hire, Alexei excels in the war room rather than on the front lines like a typical mercenary. His experience with other nations' battle planning also comes in handy when opposing countries desire such information, all for a price, of course. So, yeah, this is cool. I can see, at first I was a tiny bit confused because there's like one mercenary piece, but now I see how with expatriate and the counter thing, you could put this on a variety of game pieces and have him help out a little bit. So do you keep the counter and add another one, or is it just like a replacement? So you essentially net zero.
Yeah, I'd be like a net zero.
Okay.
So if you put it like on the Atlas and you removed an ability counter to increase the die roll by one, you can then roll separately, and on a five or six, you get another ability counter to replace it.
Yeah. Okay, nice.
So that way, each faction has access to some way to manipulate the counters they have and to support the new mechanic in the set.
Yeah, nice.
So,
That's pretty good.
which is how I felt mercenaries were kind of intended to begin with, to kind of shore up respective holes in each faction, but
Yeah.
I don't know if they turned out that way.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I'll let you pick the UT
Ooh,
for the
yeah, these.
final review.
Let's see. Yeah, let's just do the Holy Grail maybe. So it's a rare UT Holy Grail, and it reads, "Load this treasure face up. If this ship is cursed, remove all crew and masts from the ship. Otherwise, this ship gains eternal."
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's like an
Maybe
anti-curse
I may need to
device.
add on the ability, like, as long as it gains the eternal keyword, as long as the Holy Grail remains on the ship. Because what the idea is, if you get boarded and like an opponent steals a Holy Grail, you lose eternal, and their ship gains
Yeah.
eternal. So we need
Yeah.
to rework, workshop the wording on that, but.
Maybe just a tiny bit, yeah. I think I don't like blood money, so stuff like this sometimes I don't usually include. When it's super like anti one faction, because then this can sometimes might end up being like an auto include in any like non-cursed fleets, especially because it's so devastating to cursed stuff. So yeah, I would probably you could make the ability less like devastating to the curse, maybe at least if it were ranked,
Gotcha.
but yeah.
Yeah, because I guess the curse was just kind of tacked on there for thematic reasons, kind of like a holy relic, part purging
Yeah.
the curse from from the ship,
Yeah.
right? So it wasn't there intended for any specific gameplay purposes.
Yeah.
But
Okay.
yeah, I can definitely see what you say there. Yeah, because blood money can be just the absolute worst.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I like the set. This is really cool. I like how you've used like the WizKids flavor text and expanded like a lot on it. And also introduce like some new gameplay mechanics that sound really, really fascinating to try out. And I think the so far, at least my initial impression is that a lot of the point costs seem right. I mean, obviously we didn't go over everything, but it looks pretty good to me for the most part. So that's cool too. So love it.
Yeah, I tried to use some of the other community members' like formulas for putting together point costs based on like cargo space, cannons, and speed. So I tried to use that as a base before
Yep.
adding on the abilities because, like I said, some of these are just so wild and out there, it's impossible to know
Yeah,
until you play test them.
definitely.
But
Yeah. All right.
so.
So I'm trying to consider which of the ones we went over at least would be the most impactful on Vassal Campaign Game 4. I think Ragnarok probably in the short term, just because the Vikings are looking to get more defenses out there quickly. But in the long term, some of the pirate and crew stuff could definitely see play. So it'll be interesting to see how they incorporate these into the fleets.
Yeah, definitely the first that I had was the Ragnarok as well, especially with
Yeah.
the position the Vikings are in at the moment.
Yeah.
They
Yeah. Yeah.
could definitely use a hand there.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So we'll get into the questions of the day now. And I thought of one right before we started. And my question of the day for anyone listening or watching is which of these new Kraken Sea game pieces would you most want to use in a game? So you could pick one that we went over or any from the set, because now, as of today, the new version is in the customs database, which I'll include a link to in the description and everything, of course. And you can check out the set and give your thoughts on which one you'd want to try out first. But I think there's going to be a lot of competition there because there's so many fascinating new abilities and pretty powerful stuff. So. And then whenever you want, you can ask a question of the day if you'd like.
I think I just reiterate something I mentioned before. What ability seems most unique and compelling that we featured so far, or the ones that we haven't featured just yet? And if you would add any corrections or templating issues to let us know in the comments below, we would love to continue to improve on this. And I look forward to actually adding the sister set to the Kraken Sea, the Resurrection, which will kind of conclude the story arc we introduced in the beginning in the prefacing paragraph.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's a
So
great cliffhanger, man. Good job. Another set. I love it. Awesome.
It probably won't be quite as robust as this one. It's had like 139 new game pieces, so the other one looked more like a micro set, but
Yeah, that's fine though. That's cool. Awesome. Looking forward to seeing it. So, all right, thanks again for coming on. This was Pirate CSG podcast number 58. Thanks for listening. Feel free to answer the questions of the day, and we'll see you in the next episode.